Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. Those of you that are long-term listeners of my podcast, they know that I make a summer break, a longer summer break every summer. And then I also make a little Christmas winter break. So today's episode will be the last one before this winter break. Early January is a CES time, Consumer Electronics Show, the big electronics show in Las Vegas, Nevada, in the USA. And I will return probably late January with two episodes reporting from the CES. Until then, there will be a little break. And when I return late January, we will highly probable have a new president of the United States. Donald Trump will be inaugurated. And that was a trigger for me to think, what's going to change? To identify three trends that I see and to talk about those and to discuss what they mean for the automotive industry. The three trends I would like to talk about is fractured world, number one. The second one is age of disorder. And the third one is deglobalization. They are not really independent from each other. They all somehow interact, interfere, are woven into each other. But basically they are three trends identified by different trend companies, future research companies, and I have selected them to make a little forecast about how we in the automotive industry can position ourselves to ensure that we have a future. And I talk a lot about all the technological changes, and this episode will be more focusing on political changes and economical changes. It will not be a political episode, but I will touch global politics. This is something you cannot avoid if you work in a global industry. And Donald Trump is the trigger of that, and his first presidency is connected with pulling up the borders, with getting additional fees towards foreign goods and strengthening the protectionism. And China and India are getting stronger as well, and we will enter a trade war. And not that this is only Donald Trump. I mean, we have the Chinese and the Indian leaders, and even Joe Biden was very much into protectionism, USA first. Kamala Harris, if she would have been selected, probably would have gone the same path. So at the end of the day, it is somehow connected with a certain name, but this future US president is not the only one that pulls up borders, closes borders, sets limits, and yeah, this is what's happening, and we have to live with this. This is the way the world goes. So let's have a look at the old times. What was and what is over. The past century, the past decades have been, that there has been a constant networking, a constant growing together of the world being prominent. That was one of the main drivers. There was free trade, there were global supply chains, there was comparably easy traveling, there was a global open digital communication. All that was present, was there, and we took it as absolutely normal. When I was a child, I grew up in West Berlin, and we wanted to travel to other parts of Western Germany. We had to drive through the GDR, Eastern Germany, the Russian part of Germany that time. And then we had a border there. We had two borders to cross, one from West Berlin to the GDR, and then one from the GDR to Western Germany. And so I experienced that, and when the wall fell in 1989, that was suddenly gone. And within Europe, suddenly there were no borders anymore. That had been the case in Western Europe before, but suddenly, Eastern Europe was part of that as well. That was based on the idea of a united Europe. So the European Economy Union, the economical part, was founded in the mid-50s. And in the 70s, it became the European Union, the political union that we have. And part of that is open borders, free trade. This is the mindset I grew up with. And after the Second World War, the United Nations were founded to have something like a global organization. We have the WTO, the World Trade Organization, as part of the United Nations, taking care of global trade, making that easier to exchange goods and services and money. We have the G7, the G20, the BRICS, all these international organizations taking care about open borders and then free exchange. Companies use these global markets to raise efficiency, to create growth by outsourcing, by offshoring, but also by entering new markets. So the German automotive industry over many years benefited from the open Chinese market. Volkswagen and Mercedes and Audi, just to name three. These brands, they had their largest markets in China, actually. And That was based on all these open borders, these free markets that we had. And the climax of globalization was called the end of history. That was a book from the 90s from a guy called Francis Fukuyama. He became super famous with that. And he was overrun by time. He believed that a time where we have democracy of the Western style, we have free and open markets as some kind of a universal mindset of people. And everything will end up there and we will all be friends and work together and make business with each other. History proved him wrong. So it's not the end of history. History is ongoing. And we will have a different situation. This old order, this old mindset is breaking apart. I have identified three reasons for this. One is the geopolitical rivalries we have. Particularly the US and China, but also Europe and India are involved in this. We are in a trade war. We are in a technological war. We are fighting for military dominance. And we have more and more non-democratic governments. We have more and more authoritarian regimes. They get more and more influence, while the Western democracies, as we have them in most countries of the European Union, as we have it in the USA and in large parts of the world, they are not a dominant form of a political system anymore. So the non-democratic systems or the non-liberal democracies, they are becoming larger. The number of them is becoming larger. The second point why the old order is not existing anymore is economical challenges. We have the trade wars, we have sanctions, we have disrupted supply chains, we are limiting markets, and we are limiting competition. So what Donald Trump's plans with this projection against European cars, for example, or European technology in general, is limiting the competition in the US market. And at first sight, this looks good, saying, okay, for the internal economy, this may be better. I personally am one of these persons believing the more free trade we have, the more wealthy we are, and the better it is for everyone. Maybe I'm a little naive on this one, but I very much believe in this. And the second economical change, or was more just like a health change, was the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic, that showed us the weakness of a hyper-globalized world. Because suddenly, all the goods from China that you needed were not available anymore, because there were no more ships and no more aircrafts running between China and Europe, or China and the US, and vice versa. The no ships, no planes, no cargo transport was possible from the US to China or to other parts of the world. And suddenly, the supply chains broke down, the entire world trade broke down. And the third point, beyond the economical challenges and the geopolitical rivalries, is the social pressure that we experience. So inequalness and social pressure, the feeling of not being part of the big game, or the reality of not being part of the game for single persons, leads to the fact that people want to be protected. They ask for protection. They want to have more control over trade. They don't want to be the victims, or they don't want to feel as victims of global trade and global good exchange and global service exchange anymore. So the idea that global problems like migration or climate change are supposed to be solved on a global basis, that idea is heavily under pressure. So those are a little overview over the reasons why the old order of that we had since the Second World War, or since the beginning of the 20th century, with more and more globalization, with more and more free trade and open borders, is not the future anymore. And I have mentioned the three trends I'd like to talk about. The first one is fractured world. So we have a new reality. Fractured world is the separation of the world into more than one or two centers of gravity as far as the political power is concerned. In the old times, we had the USA and we had the Soviet Union as the two big countries. And you were either in one of the Western Bloc or in the Eastern Bloc. You were either in a communist bloc, or you were in the capitalist bloc. And that was clear and easy, and said, okay, we have these two ones. Today, we have at least two more significant players, basically three more significant players. That's China, that's India, and that is the European Union. And what we experience is that the USA has the MAGA politics, Make America Great Again, or the America First politics. This is what's happening. China is building the new Silk Road. The initiative is an economical initiative to gain more influence in Asia and Africa, and also in Europe. So they are building trade lines, and they are buying trade infrastructure like airports, like harbors. They are buying all the resources that we have, copper mines and gold mines and diamond mines, and they're buying all this under the idea of the new Silk Road that they are building. And in Europe, we experience a fight for strategic autonomy, for example, in the energy supply and defense. We try to make ourselves independent from the USA, which we need to do because Donald Trump is talking about leaving the NATO or not fulfilling the NATO duties. So at the end of the day, we don't know where we will be in a couple of years, whether this is just famous last words or whether this will be reality in a few years. So we don't have any idea about this one. Examples for this is trade wars between China and the US. That has changed the global supply chain, and that we see more and more regional trade contracts, trade organization, like the RCEP in Asia, the European Union strengthening. All this is visible. We have technological blocks. China is more and more building an own internet. I experienced that when I'm in China, that most of the apps that I'm using are not working in China. And this is basically because they have censorship. They have they try to build their own world of apps. So there is no WhatsApp in China, it's WeChat. To do this, and they have their own payment streams. Sometimes you cannot even pay without having the Chinese payment app. And so these are the first signs of China building an own internet. Russia, the internet is heavily censored. And in Europe, particularly in Germany, we talk about data protection, data security. Sometimes I have the feeling that sometimes I cannot even wake up in the morning and tell someone about it without taking care about data protection and allowing cookies and whatever. So we are very strict on this one, and this is extremely hindering as far as services are concerned. And we have a contest. We have a rivalry in technologies and satellites, like artificial intelligence, 5G, the different GPS systems, the location systems. So there is a lot of rivalry between the big political blocks that become more and more technological blocks. And we have, I already talked about this, the regional collaborations like the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. They are the countries that are not part of the G7, the big economical strong seven countries of the world, but they're on the way of growing into that, and they make their own group of countries. Then we have the Mercosur, which is the South American trade organization, the African Union, the ASEAN, which is the Asian one. And so there are these regional blocks that are built. This leads to lower global efficiency and higher cost. This leads to a fragmentation of the digital world. Some people already call it the splinternet, meaning the split internet, that we have different versions of internet. And for me, the internet is the number one success story of global standardization. With the internet protocol, and I think it was created in the late 60s, early 70s, but it became popular and it was used heavily in the mid 90s. That was a very nice example of how standardization allows business and supports business. Imagine you have an Apple internet, you have an Android internet, and you have a Windows internet, and you have a US version, you have a European version, you have an African version, you have an Asian version, you have a Chinese version. And none of this works because they all have different protocols. They all have different interfaces. That's not standardized. That would not allow us to communicate globally as we did it and as we do it and as we will do it in the future, because we have these different standards. So standardization is a positive thing, and that is decoupled now with the splinternet. And on the social side, the differences between regions will become stronger. I talk a lot about intercultural differences that we have. If you talk about HMI design, about products, Chinese users, I know this is stereotypic, but it's easier to handle this. Chinese users prefer this kind of color, and US users that kind of color, and European users another kind of color. And this goes down to units that you have, this goes down to political things, to philosophical, to ethical, to taste. Yeah? And I had the feeling that these cross-cultural changes will be smaller in the future, because we all use iOS, we all use Android, we all use Windows, we all use Facebook, WhatsApp, and so on, you name it. And it seems like we have these a growth of these cultural differences. So users pull themselves back into their local culture and become more and more aware of the differences and are proud of them, are using them, which is their right. It's okay. I don't criticize it, but this is a trend that we see. If we see the chances of a fragmented world, it's exactly that: localization. So we have tailored products, tailored services for single markets. And if you are able to do this, if you're able to deliver this, you can get a good position in the market and sell a lot of your product if you're aware of your local market. A fractured world may lead to more resilience, so regional supply chain and local resources reduce the risk that we have experienced during the pandemic, that suddenly the parts that I have ordered just don't arrive and I cannot build my product. It may be more sustainable, that the awareness about economical problems may become an advantage in competition. It may lead to technological innovation. So regional ideas, regional requests push certain developments. If I need something here for Europe, for Germany, and nobody else needs it, but in Germany it's required, it's paid for, then you can do it. Fragmented regions may lead to a potential for new target groups and new alliances, and with that to new markets. And all this together, taken together, it leads to stronger brands. Local identity and cultural sensitivity create more connection between technology and users, between companies producing technologies and their customers. Because you know them better, you can be more targeted in what you do. And so, yeah, you get stronger brands with stronger sales. Trend number two, age of disorder. So chaos is the new normal. So there will be no non-chaos in the future. So we are entering a period where the old order is not working anymore. I talked about this. It's dissolving, and we are not that secure anymore because there is no new order visible. So without any orders, we have an age of disorder. We have economical instabilities, inflation, crisis on materials. We have swinging markets. We have political tensions, unstable government, populism. We have countries focusing on their own benefit only and not seeing themselves as part of a system of countries, of a global network of countries. And we have a cultural polarization. Societies are split by ideologies, by values, by lifestyles. And sometimes even within families, there are voters for this party and there are voters for that party, and they don't talk to each other anymore. This is typical. That's what we experience. The ability for leading a good political discussion and even fighting about ideas, this is not possible. Either you have my opinion or you're an idiot and I don't talk to you anymore. This is part of the age of disorder. And this is driven by the nature crisis. We have the climate change. We have more and more extreme weathers. We have, as humans, we minimize our ecological niche more and more. So it's not that nature needs to be protected. Nature will survive. The problem, or the question is, will humanity survive? Will we as humans survive? Because the niche we are living in is getting smaller with all what we do. And we will have conflicts about resources like oil, like nature, like materials. But first of all, I think the most critical one is about water. We in the Western world, we are used to have water. We go to the water tap and we open it and we have water in it. This is only true for a minority of people globally. But even for the basic supply with water, we have problems and there are wars about water. And with this one, I see this as one of the most critical ones on a global basis, that we have to fulfill the right of every single human of the world to have water. Otherwise, we cannot survive. We have technological disruptions. We have a lot of automation, not only in driving, but in any kind of production. We see artificial intelligence is on the rise at the moment. Everybody's talking about artificial intelligence, and it changes the way we work, the way we think, the way we deliver results. All this is driven by artificial intelligence and changed, dramatically changed by artificial intelligence. And we experience more and more cyber attacks. So data security and security of private devices and privacy, digital privacy, that gets into the focus. And until Russia attacked the Ukraine in a traditional way, with tanks and with rockets and with weapons, there was a strong belief that these, let's say, traditional wars, these old-fashioned wars, they will not work anymore. They will not happen anymore. Everything will be digital and we will be in the cyberspace. I mean, Putin proved us wrong. He's making one of these traditional wars, but it's also supported, heavily supported by cyber attacks. And there are proofs that the elections in the US were influenced by Russian troll factories. We experienced this in Europe as well. So the presidential elections in Romania were just canceled because there is a strong proof that Russia influenced that one through cyber attacks. Those of you that are a little aware of German politics, we will have an election in February here, and everybody fears that this will happen also here in Germany. Beyond the technological disruption and the ecological disruption that we have, there is a social disruption. In the early times, in Germany, we say there was an idiot in every village, but they were single, and they didn't have any way to connect with each other. So with the internet, they can connect and build huge groups of idiots and talking about strange things. And so this leads to the polarized world that we have less discussion and more fighting, no more exchange of ideas, but just trying to kill the other ideas of the others. And we have the conflicts between generations and ideologies. The chances that we have this age of disorder, we can create innovation with disruption. We can create new models of leadership and partnerships, and we can establish new corporations and supply chains. This is what we can do, and this is what we have to do. Number three, deglobalization and the return to the regional. we have this political changes on a worldwide basis. We need to keep our supply chains, our production chains local, and we need to lower dependencies. And so we have a backlash that things are produced more locally in the future. We'll have more regional alliances, and we will have more and more technological standalone actions. So the countries strive to be independent from others as far as technology is concerned. So the chip technologies, the chip, worldwide chip market is a very good example of that. There is only a limited number of companies producing chips. Many of them are out of Taiwan. And if something happens in Taiwan, war, earthquakes, and these factories stop to produce, suddenly no one has chips anymore. And so we in Germany, we tried it twice with ZF on one side and with Intel on the other side to establish chip manufacturings in Germany. Both failed. Billions of euros were spent on this, supposed to be spent on this. But at the end of the day, both companies just pulled back out of this and said, no, we don't want this anymore. The advantage of deglobalization is growing resilience towards global shocks, towards global developments that we have, and protecting local economies. A quick look at the automotive industry, and most of what I said is, you can put it on a one-to-one basis onto the automotive industry. So fractured world, age of disorder, and deglobalization will influence our industry heavily. The automotive industry since decades is one of the most globalized businesses. So we produce cars globally, we sell them globally, we use parts from, if we produce a car in Germany on a German production line, we have parts from all of Europe, from US, from China, from Asia, that are built into these cars. And with the fractured world, the age of disorder, and the deglobalization, that model, of course, is highly endangered. So we have to reorganize supply chain and production. We have to make them shorter. We need to localize them to lower the global dependencies between the single companies. We see in the automotive industry a just-in-time supply chain, a just-in-time production model. So right in the second I want to build something into a car, I want to put on a production line a tire onto a car, then it needs to be there. It needs to be delivered there in the correct order, in the correct time. And if it comes in 2 minutes too late, the production has to stop. That's a disaster. We have to change this one towards more robust models with buffers, with larger buffers, so that we can say, okay, the tire production is stopped somewhere, or the delivery is stopped for whatever reason, we still have a couple of hundreds of them somewhere. We can use them to put them onto a car. Second point, we have more regional markets, more regional strategies. So we have to fit cars to local conditions anyway. Well, we have to do this because, as I said, the world is drifting apart and the awareness of cultural differences becomes bigger. So we need different models anyway. So, and then Europe, we will have a focus more on electric cars, on larger electric cars, in China on smaller electric cars, and big combustion engine SUVs will survive for a comparably long time in the USA. And we need cheap cars for Africa and then Southeastern Asia and South America. So we have the cultural fragmentation. We have a legislation fragmentation. I was very surprised when I made a podcast a couple of weeks ago on autonomous and automated trucks in the US, that even within the US, within the states, there's different legislations as far as automated driving is concerned. What is allowed, what's not allowed, what are the safety procedures, how does it need to be tested? All that may differ between different countries in Europe, between the global markets anyway, and even within the USA. And again, we have this fragmentation, and it will be easier with more local markets, with deglobalized thinking and deglobalized action. It will be easier to meet these fragmentations. We have fragmented digital infrastructure. So we need to develop software platforms for different regions. I talked about the SplinterNet. I talked about the different apps and the different ways of handling digital data in China, in the US, and in Europe. And particularly in China, they have a domination of different digital ecosystems. And fragmented, localized, deglobalized markets will allow us to focus on the single markets and to develop, if it's not different versions of the cars, at least different versions of the software. And this is what we need to do. And I just had a keynote at a software-defined vehicles conference, and there we talked a lot about what is a software-defined vehicle. You have a blank sheet of paper, it's a car, it's just a piece of hardware with all the electronics in it, and then you put the software onto it and make it a car, make it alive, create user experiences and fulfill all these different local needs and legislations. So we have this fragmentation. We have to develop processes, or we have to establish processes that allows us the development either in local markets for local markets, or at least for local markets in different locations. We have limits in resources, we have climate change, and we have strong dependency on certain materials like lithium, cobalt, nickel, because they are only found in certain locations in the world. I mean, they are needed globally, but they're only found in very specific locations. And so single countries have enormous amounts of power by owning these materials. And at the very end of the day, we need new business models in the automotive industry. So the OEMs, the car makers, need to cooperate with regional suppliers and regional technology companies. So we have Toyota in Asia with its own ecosystem, and Volkswagen Europe, General Motors in the USA, just to name three of them. And they all need to have local supply chains and local service providers. And I already said this, we need more flexible platforms. We need to do more software-defined, software definition and vehicles to meet the different defragmented, deglobalized markets. The chance that we have is we can build more resilient supply chains. We can create better products that fit better to local markets, and we can be more sustainable with what we do. So we are at a turning point. I am positive. I won't leave you with a sad message here, but we need to do things. We need to get ourselves going, raise flexibility, create innovation, and create a think about how can we realize a localized or regional focus. All right. So on this episode of the Human Technology Podcast, I talked about three trends: the fractured world, the age of disorder, deglobalization, all targeting into the same direction. And I analyzed what we as the automotive industry need to do to stay alive, to keep our jobs alive, to keep our innovation alive, to keep on creating these good, great, beautiful products that we have. So flexibility is the key. We need to adapt to change, and we need to have a constant idea of change, or as my friend and colleague Ilya Greshkovitz says, change, baby, change. There is no new normal. There's only a never normal. The world is in a constant change, and Trying to stick with the old order will kill us. That's it for today. That's it for this year. I wish all of you celebrating it a happy and relaxing, peaceful Christmas time. Enjoy the free days with your families. For all the others, happy holidays. Or if you do not have any kind of free time in the next weeks, any kind of holidays in the next years, keep on rocking, keep on going. And I'll be back late January with a report from the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast at beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time. Take care and stay healthy.